Thousands of Afghan refugees, rescued by American forces, will soon be arriving in cities throughout the United States. And already, we are hearing fear-mongering, conservative pundits warning of a flood of unvetted Afghans coming to the country. But what are the realities, especially at a time when President Biden is aiming to present a compassionate stance on immigration after 4 years of anti-immigrant policies from the Trump administration? Joining us now to talk about this is David Miliband, president and CEO of the International Rescue Committee. He joins us from New York. Welcome back.
Thanks very much. It's good to be with you.
Yes. So, you know, even before the Taliban's takeover, Afghanistan was one of the countries on your list in desperate need of humanitarian aid. It has the second largest number of refugees in the world. What's your current assessment of the scramble to get people out now?
There are three humanitarian crises in Afghanistan at the moment. One is the people who are desperately trying to complete their paperwork or get their paperwork recognized so that they can get to the airport and get out. There are tens of thousands of people in that category. There's a second humanitarian crisis relating to the 500,000 people who've been displaced by the recent fighting. They're homeless. They've fled from towns and villages that have been taken over. Those are people with nothing. And then the third humanitarian crisis is half the country depend on humanitarian aid. There's a drought that affects 80% of the country. There's COVID vaccines for less than 10% of the country. And I think it's really important that we remember that there's a sacred duty owed to those who were promised refuge because they were working for the US or the UK or anyone else. But there's also the vast majority of Afghans who are going to stay beyond the military withdrawal. And those are people served by the 1,700 staff of the International Rescue Committee, my organization, along with other charities, who are made up of Afghans who want to help rescue what they can for their own country.
I want to unpack this idea of sacred duty. We've been talking over the last few days about the people in Afghanistan who worked alongside U.S. troops. Many of them have waited for years for visas to come to the United States. And of the more than 300,000, we know only a fraction of those people qualify for refugee protection here. What has been the breakdown? Why has America been so slow?
Well, I think that they're not just waiting. They are stuck in a labyrinthine bureaucratic process. There are two of them, actually. One's called the Special Immigrant Visa Program. That has a congressionally mandated limit at the moment of 10,000 places. Obviously, that needs to be massively increased. But it's taking 2 years to get through the Special Immigrant Visa Program. That's even for people who've already been working directly for the US. So the second route is the so-called P2 Priority 2 visa program. That goes to people beyond those directly employed by the US. It has more open conditions. So, for example, media or NGOs, non-governmental organizations, contractors to the US government. And there's obviously a new bureaucracy being developed. And all of the experience is that unless you throw everything at this, it will leave people stuck because, of course, it's hard to get to the interviews. The paperwork gets lost. It's very, very important that because the United States, other countries made a promise to these people that it's fulfilled. And frankly, they don't want to hear that we haven't got the resources to put the systems in place because our countries are many times richer than theirs.
So we're mired in bureaucracy, but at a time when we're dealing with three humanitarian crises, I mean, how do you feel as someone who works in this realm where you're trying to help people in the immediate, but you're up against these bureaucratic entities?
Well, I think that the best thing I can do is relay what our International Rescue Committee Afghan staff are saying. We had a meeting with them yesterday. They're saying to me, to us, we want to hold on to the gains that we've made, but we can't do that if a military withdrawal is, first of all, done in a chaotic way, but secondly, is accompanied by humanitarian, political, diplomatic withdrawal. I mean, the US aid budget to Afghanistan is not going up, it's flat. So there are very simple things that are frustrating them on the policy side as well as on the bureaucratic side. How does it feel? They're afraid. They're worried about the future. They know that they've got family, extended family in Afghanistan. So it's a huge decision to say, yes, I'm going to leave. I'm going to uproot myself and my immediate family. And then to find that it's not clear whether or not they can go leaves them in this terrible limbo where they don't want to give up hope. They don't want to believe that the promises were false, but they see reality staring them in the face and they're having to figure out how to get up in the morning and live under a new regime.
You are also the former Foreign Secretary of the United Kingdom. How important are allied nations in this effort?
Well, they are important. People in the leadership in Europe and elsewhere, they look at the United States and they look for commitment, steadiness. They look for consultation that is meaningful. And they certainly welcome the arrival of the Biden administration. But they are very concerned that this is going to have long-lasting effects, this Afghan situation, not just within the country. Because here's the big lesson that allies around the world have learned in the last 20 years. What starts in Afghanistan doesn't stop in Afghanistan. That was shockingly revealed on 9/11, 20 years ago. And it's still very much in the European mind, I think, at the moment. They think about countries like Pakistan next door, very important country for the UK. And they want to be partners with the US.
They want to be partners, but we also know that the EU has been reluctant to accept more refugees. What obligation does Europe have beyond what we currently see?
I would say there's a very significant duty on European states, and Americans should be loud in calling it out. The Biden administration has said it wants to expand numbers. Canada has said it'll take 20,000 refugees and their families. The Biden administration needs to match that and expand it, given that America's a much bigger country. But absolutely, you should be calling on Europeans to fulfill their obligations as well.
You mentioned 9/11. The so-called war on terror, of course, began 20 years ago. We're coming up on that anniversary. We're kind of at this full circle moment with our relationship with Afghanistan. And maybe perhaps more importantly, America's perceptions of the country and its people as refugees come into the country. This is really a big question, but what approach reflects the morals of our nation?
For the first time in 100 years, the combined income of autocratic countries, dictatorships, is greater than the combined income of Western democracies, including the United States. So the context in which the democratic experiment of the United States is playing out is different. You can't just say the tide of history is on the side of liberal democratic order. It's very, very different than the assumptions of 30 years ago. And that's a context where obviously there's repair work to be done by the United States at home. But there's no holiday from history. You can't focus on the home front and expect the world to take care of itself. We have to be able to, you as a country, me as a British citizen, I would make the same argument for the UK, albeit with less power. We have a responsibility not just to fix our own roof. We've got a responsibility in a world that is more and more connected to be a global force that is effective. And if that's not going to mean military commitment in Afghanistan, it won't. It needs to mean humanitarian, political, diplomatic commitment. It means alliance building. It means being an effective partner of those who are willing to partner. And that seems to me to be a very important lesson as we close the 9/11 era.
Do you think there's enough political will right now to help refugees in the United States?
Well, I think that the country is very polarized on this issue as on others. But I am encouraged that 2/3 plus of Americans say that people who are fleeing for their lives deserve sanctuary here. And across Republican and Democratic state governors, there was a significant response in 2019 when the Trump administration threatened to close down the refugee resettlement program. The lesson I draw as someone who's worked in America for the last 8 years but is not an American, is that it's the voices of refugees themselves who in America today are business people, sports people, in politics, you name it, in all aspects of American life. They need to tell their refugee story. They need to be enabled to tell their refugee story, because you couldn't find a more patriotic or productive group of American citizens than those who know the value of freedom because they've had it denied them.
David Miliband is president and CEO of the International Rescue Committee. David, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you so much.